Hi, this is Dr. Mike Chupp, and you are listening to CMDA Matters, the weekly podcast of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. Well, for me, one of the most impactful moments of this past year's CMDA National Convention was when Professor Robert George, also known as Robbie, from Princeton University, he shared about the importance of courage. And he told us so eloquently in the way that only Robbie George can do, that courage is contagious. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you might remember that he briefly talked about that concept on our podcast just a few months ago. Here at CMDA, so many of our members are taking up that very mantle and courageously standing up for life in the public square. So this week, we're featuring a CMDA cameo of courage. In this week's interview, Dr. Jeff Barrows and I are joined by Dr. Thomas Epps, who recently displayed an incredible amount of courage when he stood up and was heard at a regular meeting of the American Medical Association all by himself. Keep listening for more. Well, today on CMDA Matters, we have a guest, Tom Epps, Jr. He has served as a delegate to the AMA, the American Medical Association, for the last 14 years. During that time of service, he was chair of the Integrated Physician Practice Section, and he's the current chair of the Virginia delegation to the AMA. Welcome to CMDA Matters, Dr. Tom Epps.
Thank you so much.
Well, you've been a member of the AMA for a number of years, Dr. Epps, and probably both of us and my co-host today, Jeff Barrows, we know a number of our CMDA members who basically have canceled their membership and want nothing to do with the AMA for a number of reasons that the three of us fully understand. Why have you chosen to stay the course with the AMA over the years?
Well, whether it be within the Medical Society of Virginia or whether it be within the AMA, when I go to the meetings, I understand that there are a ton of things that are discussed that are really integral to the practice of medicine. And the last time that I found somebody to agree with me was like never, that all the time we look at different things, we have different viewpoints, but we need to come to a consensus about the practice of medicine. Unfortunately, many of the issues such as abortion and physician-assisted suicide and right of conscience, there are vast gaps between what people want to believe and what they say. And if you're not in the trenches fighting the battle, you can't win the battle. That's the way I've always viewed it. And that's why I still stick in there, even though there's sometimes that things are very tough.
Well, Tom, I actually joined the AMA since coming to CMDA here in Bristol in the national office. And I joined because I just wanted to see what their point of view was. And I get every single day, maybe you do too, their morning rounds, which is a blog with lots of information. And even in the last week, have learned some things about U.S. maternal mortality rates, about the social media epidemic among young people. But I must admit, I joined just so I could monitor what the counterpart on the number of bioethical issues that we stand in, what they're saying. Are there any other issues as you have served in Virginia and nationally with the AMA that you think you want to share with our listeners that maybe they should reconsider if they've stopped?
You can make an impact. And I will say that I spoke for Virginia on the right of conscience years ago and was helped in my talking points by David Stevens at that time. And it was impactful because I know they changed the way that the AMA wanted to tell pharmacists what to do about their right of conscience by changing a verb that you shall have to do something that you should take into consideration, which was a big change. And then if I happened to be in a group of three, two other Catholic physicians and I took up the banner when Oregon wanted the AMA to go neutral or to support physician-assisted suicide. And that was a three-year battle. And we went to multiple venues and signed up and talked and at the reference committees. And that was one that we won by about a 70 to 30 vote that we maintained the AMA's long-standing, and that was about a 30-year standing, against physician-assisted suicide. and it was articulately and wonderfully stated. The other thing that has been helpful is we've gotten people with the Council on Ethical Judicial Affairs submitted their names to be members of that. Dan Solmesi, which is the Ed Pellegrino chair at Georgetown, got appointed because one of my friends in that group of three put his name up and he got appointed. And so you want people in the right place making the right decisions, or at least have a voice. And that is what led to this year.
Well, Dr. Epps, you recently submitted several resolutions regarding abortion at the annual meeting of the AMA. And before we get into exactly what was in those resolutions, your journey to do this began several months prior to that. So tell us a little bit why you decided to undertake this task at this time.
It really started in June of last year. The AMA meeting was after the Dobbs decision was leaked, but before it was finally published. And there was a just huge swelling amongst the young physicians, both residents and students, the women physicians, the OBGYNs in particular, and then people that are politically aligned to the left, to have an affirmation of a woman's right to choose, and then finally to make abortion as a stated right, a human right. And when I stood up at that meeting in June, and after talking with my Virginia colleagues, what we had suggested is that we don't want physicians criminalized nor patients criminalized, and we agree with that. But what we wanted to do is wait and see what the decision was before we started taking positions. And I could feel arrows and knives going in my back after I said that. And that one of my friends came up the next day and looked at me and said, "You're the bravest person I ever know for what you said in reference committee." And this report had to be reaffirmed and reworked in November. And at that time, the attitude was one of great triumph that they had taken the AMA in a place that it had not been forever, that the AMA has had an anti-abortion stance since a gentleman by the name of Horatio Storr, who formed the first OBGYN or GYN specialty, also took up the life of the unborn. And this was back in the 1800s. And so there was something that sat in my stomach that just really made me ill about the way this was responded to. This would not go away at all. It stayed with me. And finally, after about mulling for 3 months, I finally decided I got to do something about this. And I contacted a friend about what was eating at my soul. And that friend told me the day that friend walked out of Mass had the same feelings. And that person responded to me within minutes after I sent an email to her. And the journey started at that point.
Well, Dr. Epps, the cancel culture is real, including within the AMA. And how have you seen, in your experience on the inside, a cancel culture being exhibited?
They don't want to hear what I have to say. And this was really uncomfortable for them by the way that I went about bringing it up. Because by bringing a resolution, which each member of the AMA is permitted to do, that it put it on the forefront, whether they wanted to hear it or not. And I think just moving ahead in the reference committee, the people that didn't like what I proposed talked around what I was talking about. They never directly addressed the issues that I very carefully tried to craft something that they would have to answer in the affirmative. And nobody ever, ever said anything.
We tried to help folks join you in this effort and in this journey. Were you surprised that between Jeff Barrows and our advocacy team and yourself that no one would join you?
Well, I only had a couple of people say that they would even talk, and a couple actually showed up at the meeting to talk. And I was surprised that there were people that did not do it. Now, I was warned by my contact that that person felt there were probably only about 20 people in the AMA that would have the courage to bring it up. And during the deliberations and after the deliberations, I had people come up to me and say, "We really agree with you. I just don't have the courage to stand up and say it." And that to me is incredibly sad. But it also just let me know that the prophets were handled the same way in the Old Testament. And so I felt like that, you know, what I had to do was keep going. And I had a wonderful priest here that always put things in a spiritual context about you're going to be a lone person standing out there. I knew that I was going to be by myself when I went there. And I was, for the most part.
So, Tom, take it back to your stand alone, like Daniel, at the AMA on the issue of abortion. What was the final conclusion to that? Anything you would say would come out of that was positive, an impact, or really was just totally your view canceled?
I very clearly, purposefully chose to make the issue the life of the viable unborn, because I felt like that if I went back and said, okay, I'm pro-life, but when I'm pro-life, I mean pro-choice, I'm pro-life, and therefore they would have shut me out tremendously. But they couldn't really do that because the AMA had no stance, neither does the AOA have any stance on the unborn and also the rights of the viable unborn. And so I very carefully crafted three resolutions: the rights of the unborn, asking for a study to be done to extend care to the unborn, and then also to get real statistics about the frequency of abortions in the United States, because the reporting of abortions is voluntary, not all states do it, and there's 1% of abortions are actually in the last trimester, but there's a group of children that really could live if somebody did something about it and supported them at that time. That was the focus, because that's hard to argue against a living child. They talked around it, but not talk directly at it. And that was the frustrating part for me. What I learned and what I will continue to do is maybe even to narrow it down even further to be able to get better statistics about the number of children that are delivered that could live but aren't in the third trimester because they don't get the right care, and force them to do that. And then the final thing, which one of my advisors suggested I do, is to contact the media so that the media would force the AMA to say they voted against the viable unborn. That would be a stance that I think that would be hard for them to justify.
Well, Tom, you've been with the AMA for a long time, and you mentioned earlier that clearly they're the largest group of healthcare professionals, you know, in the country. There are some issues that I believe we align with in most ways with the AMA, some topics, for example, physician well-being, burnout issues. There were some issues during the pandemic in terms of maintaining your team and your morale. What would be the top two or three things that you would say a Venn diagram of CMDA's priorities, your priorities, and the AMA's that overlap?
Well, obviously, physician sustainability, whether it be burnout or whatever the issue, is one that they're very concerned about. The things that are a burr in the saddle for us all the time when we are trying to practice on a daily basis, meaning prior authorization, Medicare reform, you know, the Medicare reimbursement rate has been lagging tremendously over the last 20 years, and it really hurts us from that standpoint. There are countless little things that go on a daily basis that affect the way we practice medicine and the rules and regulations that people make up, that if you don't have somebody advocating for you in Washington, it's a mess. And I think that, you know, the vast majority of the things we do of educating the next generation in a fabulous way to have great professionals out there, how to build teams with our APPs. All those things are issues that come up every time that are very important to make us be able to continue the profession in a way that we would love the profession to be excellent as we care for the people that we care most about, and that's our patients.
Well, Dr. Epps, moving beyond the arena of advocacy, I'm curious as to how being a CMDA member for many years, I think you're about the same age as I am, how has that impacted your two main professions? I would assume your profession of faith in the great physician, as well as your profession as a physician in practice in Virginia.
Well, I listened to the podcast. I just love things. I mean, one of the things that let me know I was on the right track for this meeting was you had a thing on courage and, you know, and reaching out. And that was just instrumental. And I just, these little podcasts fall into place in really sorts of ways, really inspirational about how people have taken up their cross at the right time to do whatever they're being called to do, in spite of people not wanting them to do it. And so I listened to CMDA. I listened to multiple thought leaders like John Lennox and Ravi Zacharias and Metaxas on YouTube, just trying to spring out and think in a broader fashion to stay up to date with not only medical information, which I think we have to do, because you need to be an excellent physician as well as an excellent Christian. They will not listen to your Christian viewpoint if you're a crappy physician.
It is very easy for us. John Stone Street at the Colson Center talks about the inevitability hypothesis, that we just have this idea that it's unlikely we're going to win, so why even engage in the battle? And I just want to appreciate that you have engaged at a high level, even though no one joined me, still I'm going to continue to follow the Holy Spirit's direction. And so thank you for being a very faithful witness in a difficult place. Jeff and I can't appreciate enough. You are our hero for having done that recently.
I just appreciate your input, both of you. The one thing I haven't mentioned, that I did something I've never done before, and that was a coach to help me with this, to help me with the talking points, to make them hone down. It's really hard to be able to say what you want to say in 2 minutes or less. And so that was instrumental in being able to craft things to be said quickly, succinctly, and the right sort of way, and to carry on for the future, because this is a battle that needs to continue. Physician-assisted suicide is going to come back. You can see it in the background. We just have to stand up for what's right.
Well, Tom, I hope and pray that your interview on this podcast will encourage and inspire other members to stand up and follow the call of the Holy Spirit that you had laid on your heart many months ago. That's my prayer.
Well, thank you, because it's still there.
Dr. Epps, just as a call to action for our listeners across the United States, how could they get more involved in their state medical societies in the future? Jeff Barrels is always talking about the long game. We have to think about the long game and influencing these societies. How could they get more involved at the state level and national level as you have done?
It is a long game, first of all. And I got to say that very clearly, because what you have to do, it took me years to get into position to even become a delegate to AMA. But your state society will covet you going to the meetings. And you'll find there that there are multiple things that are discussed that are important to you on a statewide basis, and volunteer to be a part of the process. And then eventually somebody's going to say, if you volunteer, man, he ought to be a leader or she ought to be a leader in that effort. And then as you become a leader, you can move up the food chain. So you got to start at the bottom, because nobody's just nominated to be at the top. But it took me years to get to where I am right now. But that was a conviction I had, that this was the avenue I was supposed to work, through the state medical society and then through the AMA. But it could be through your specialty society also, both locally, state-wise and nationally likewise.
Yeah, as Mike has said, I am convinced that if we don't have, especially our younger generation, take the time and effort to get involved in their specialty section, their specialty, or AOA, AMA, whatever, volunteer their time, we will lose them. Well, we have lost them at this point in time, but we can gain them back if we look 10, 15, 20 years down the road.
I agree that it's going to be a process. It won't happen quick. But, you know, it's like what happens is the American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs, almost all of them have dropped out of the AMA. So you've totally lost that voice in the AMA. That's why the ACOG is so powerful when you've got a group of people that think in 180 degrees the other direction when it comes to issues of life.
Tom, I wanted to close by just sharing a paragraph from one of our wonderful legal warriors, Luke Goodrich, who is our Beckett attorney. I interviewed him a couple of years back about his book, Free to Believe. And one of his chapter title is Let Go of Winning. Let Go of Winning. And he says, I think starting with a strategy of winning is the wrong way to approach the question. It assumes the primary goal in religious freedom conflicts is to win. And it's often driven by fear, fear that our rights will be taken away or other bad things will happen if we lose. That fear in turn produces anger, hostility, frustration, and despair. God's word, however, calls us to a radically different approach. We're called not to win, but to be like Jesus. Not to fear suffering, but to fear God. Not to be surprised at hostility, but to expect it. Not to complain when we lose, but to rejoice. Not to lash out at our opponents, but to love them. We're called not to avoid losing at all costs, but to glorify God at all costs. So thank you. I think you practiced what he was preaching recently there as delegate to the AMA. Tom, any final comments?
One final thing is that of a line I quoted at the AMA, and that an opinion is something that you hold. A conviction is something that holds you. I became very convicted that I had to hold on to this. And that's what I would hope that all people would do with their faith as they practice their profession.
Well, I gotta believe that Dr. Epps' courage and his stalwart conviction to stand up for life before the American Medical Association should be an encouragement and a motivator for us all who are Christians in healthcare. Perhaps you've been disillusioned by the way that state and national medical societies are being so heavily influenced by today's post-Christian culture. Or maybe you've decided you didn't want to financially support an organization that no longer really speaks for you. If you listen today and are no longer a member of your state medical association or the AMA, would you pray about and consider rejoining those organizations? When we maintain membership in our secular professional associations, it does offer opportunities for us to influence discussions as well as bring forward resolutions that hold to the traditional life-honoring values of Hippocratic and biblically consistent medicine. And if you're already a member, I hope that Dr. Epps' experience, it'll encourage you to stand up for biblically consistent Hippocratic values and use your expertise as well as your influence and your voting opportunities to promote the value of human life.
Have you heard about freedomtocare.org? It is the hub for CMDA's advocacy work. There you will find resources, ways to get involved, information about active federal bills that we are tracking, and much more. Freedom to Care is focused on educating, encouraging, and equipping citizens to advocate our First Amendment freedoms. Plus, we enable healthcare professionals to uphold life-honoring principles found within traditional Hippocratic medical ethics. For more information, visit freedomtocare.org. That's freedom, the number two, care.org.
By the way, If you'd like to follow in Dr. Epps' footsteps and learn more about how you can get involved in speaking in the public square, then I encourage you to contact CMDA's advocacy department. We are here to help equip you to defend and care for your most vulnerable patients. You can contact our A-team, as I like to call them, by using advocacy@cmda.org. Before I close out this week's episode, we've got an important Stewardship Matters moment just for you. Here's Paul Montgomery, our CMDA Senior Director of Stewardship, who's joined by Steve Baker from the Barnabas Foundation. And they're going to talk with us about how legacy planning can make a difference for you and your family.
Today, we have a very special guest, Steve Baker, who is with the Barnabas Foundation. The Barnabas Foundation is one of the CMDA strategic partners who assist our donors with a myriad of legacy planning strategies. Steve is Director of Planning at the Barnabas Foundation, and he has helped many of our CMDA donors. So welcome, Steve.
Thanks very much, Paul. Good to be here with you all.
Steve, can you take a few minutes and explain how Barnabas helps our donors?
Yes, absolutely. At Barnabas Foundation, we're privileged to partner with you in helping donors figure out their estate planning goals and objectives, how to structure plans so that they steward the resources that God has given to them towards their families, but also to the ministries that are near and dear to their hearts. And we do that through really three ways. We help folks in the estate planning area. We help folks who are thinking about giving appreciated assets. And that can be done either through life income agreements or through a donor advised fund type of giving. So those are the three areas that we're involved with, and we're privileged to do that with CMDA and its ministry partners.
Thanks, Steve. And Steve, in today's economy, what are some strategic tips you might share with us regarding giving to Christian ministries?
Well, in today's economy, with volatile equity markets and higher interest rates at the time, we believe that using the qualified charitable distributions from IRAs is a very strategic way to support Christian ministries. First, older folks have to take the minimum required distributions anyway. So just sending some or all of the minimum required distribution to charity makes a lot of sense. Second, since many people take the standard deduction on their tax returns now, rather than itemizing charitable contributions, this is a double benefit. People do not have to report the income, and they can use that higher standard deduction on their income tax return. Secondly, I think if there are appreciated assets such as stocks that folks have owned for a long time, even though they might be down a little bit in value now, they still could be appreciated in value, or they've owned some real estate that they've had for quite a while and it's appreciated. These assets really make great tax-wise giving strategies.
Oh, okay. And what are a couple of common challenges you can help our professionals address in their legacy estate plans?
Well, there are a number of challenges that folks run into in their planning. Common challenges that we help Christians address are what type of an estate plan fits their needs. There's a variety of ways to kind of do planning, but we really help them sort of figure out what type of plan fits their needs. We help them navigate who should be named as executors or trustees. And then we also try to help navigate the larger questions on how best do we benefit families and how best to put resources into kingdom ministries. Those are common challenges. There's never the same answer for everybody. It just is a matter of prayer and working through the different ideas and alternatives, and we're privileged to do that.
And Steve, we're always thankful for what you do for us and with our donors. And now I will ask George Courtney if he would close us out and give some closing remarks. George?
Paul, thanks for inviting me to be a part of this today. And Steve, wow, what a blessing you have personally been to me And to Paul, I know, and to so many of our members, we're so grateful for the Barnabas Foundation. Over the past couple of years, we've enjoyed a membership on behalf of our CMDA members at the Barnabas Foundation. This has empowered or allowed us to bring members to you that are going through reviewing their estate plans, praying through challenging spots, and to get wisdom from planners like yourself that have worked with hundreds of families in multiple scenarios and bring that wisdom to help our audience, our donors and our members of CMDA. And the wonderful part of that is that you offer this without a cost or without any obligation. It's truly an act of stewardship on your part. So thank you for doing that on behalf of CMDA. We're so grateful for the Barnabas Foundation.
Thank you very much.
Well, Steve and Paul, it's been great to be a part of this conversation today and just share a few tips with our listeners. You know, some of the happiest people that I've met are people who have discovered the joy of giving. So I'll leave our listeners today with this challenge. Why not give something today? A smile, a kind word of encouragement, a listening ear, maybe extend some grace, and maybe even a special financial gift to one of your favorite charities. Until we meet again, enjoy your journey of personal generosity. Who knows, you may even find an extra portion of happiness.
Well, next week, you're going to get the opportunity to hear from a dynamic duo here within the CMDA realm. I'll be joined by CMDA's new president, our chairman of the board, Dr. George Gonzalez, and he's joined by his wife, Angelica. George and Angelica, they've been involved in CMDA for several decades now, and their partnership in ministry has made such a difference for the CMDA ministry efforts in their local community in California. And we asked them to come and share with us a little bit more about how that happened. So join me back here next Thursday to hear more. As always, if you want to suggest a future guest for our podcast, you can just email us using cmdamatters@cmda.org. And if you like our podcast, especially if you listen week after week, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and share us on your favorite social media platform. By the way, if you have a recommendation for our next cameo of courage, someone who is so exemplary in the way that they have stood up for their convictions, who could be featured on our podcast, I hope you'll share that with us, again, by using cmdamatters@cmda.org. You know, there's something that Dr. Epps shared at the very end, the last thing he said, and I think it bears repeating as I close today. He said, "An opinion is something that you hold, while a conviction is something that holds on to you." What conviction is holding you today, friend? Are you convicted to stand up for the preborn? Are you convicted to speak up for children suffering from gender dysphoria? Are you feeling the tug on your heart to get out of your comfort zone and serve on a mission trip? Or are you perhaps being convicted to do something entirely new, to make a difference in healthcare? Whatever it looks like for you, I believe that God is giving each of us the courage that we need to stand up for Him through healthcare. And in being courageous for Christ, we will be bringing the hope and healing of Christ to our world. As you hear me say each week, that is what matters to CMDA, friends, and CMDA matters. I hope to see you next week, God willing.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.